Good morning. Well, good day to everybody. We are the fifth in I am in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam, and it is so wonderful to be with all the 13 Sangha present today. This morning I was with the Montreal MPC. And we had a beautiful 14 mindfulness trainings recitation ceremony, and it was so wonderful for me to be able to attend from a distance, and it was so nice to be able to be chanting in French and reciting the trainings with the with my home sangha. So we are now 12:05 in on the 15th of December in Vietnam, and there's a 12 hours difference with the East Coast, and maybe 9 hours with the Mountain Sangha. Today's talk is the fourth talk of this year's series on the Lotus Sutra, and I have been in contact with the Laughing River Sangha in Pittsburgh and Plum Blossom Sangha in Austin and the MPC Montreal, and it was also so good to have received some comments from our sister Patrice in Omaha. So I take this opportunity to invite you to please share with me any comments, any well, anything you may that you may find that can be that I can learn from the different sangha, from the different talks. This series, as I have already mentioned, is a joint effort, and I have invited Brother Tony in Pittsburgh, Sister Terry in Austin, and Sister Lily in Montreal to work together joyfully in order to come up with this this year program. So the wonderful program that you are receiving every month is that is the fruit of that joint effort. Sister Patrice has asked how to use the all the documentation and all the information that is being sent to you. My advice was that the pre-readings are sent to you for your information, and if you like to look them over, it is very good documentation that can be very helpful. There has been also an invitation for you to read and to consult the book by Thay, and it is also good if you really want to go into the study of the Lotus Sutra to get yourself the translation by I think the name is Jean Ruiz. To get the book and to do it, it is very, I would say, entertaining. I like to read it because I like comics books. I like, and when I read the Lotus Sutra, I approach it as, as I just said, as a comic book. And when I read about all those fantasy thing, I'm really thinking of those Japanese comic book that we see now, like Sailor Moon. Well, I don't know which one is the latest one, but to try to understand it can be to try to understand it literally can be challenging and overwhelming. So I will invite you to just, if you do want to read it, to do it in a very light way, and to just let yourself get things soaked and immersed into in it. So we have started this series with a reminder that all Buddhist teachings need to be looked into and approached and studied and learned in view of the Four Noble Truths, meaning we do not study any sutra or any teaching to get any more knowledge, because that is not the point. The teachings of the Buddha, all teachings of the Buddha, are intended only for one thing. It's to help us, to help liberate us from our suffering, from our well, maybe we can call ill beings, or to bring about transformation to help us. The promise of the Buddhist teachings, especially when we are learning the Lotus Sutra, is liberation, is freedom. And it goes beyond the freedom from notions and concepts that we have learned last year in the with the Diamond Sutra. Keeping that in mind, what I think that we can remember from the previous talks is that one of the sources of our suffering is our attachment to views and notions. It's because of our limited understanding and of the way that we look at things. And when I say things, I mean dharmas, with small d's, everything that is or can be. And that is how we have looked into the two dimensions of everything. We live in the historical dimension, and in the historical dimension we are in, that is how, or that is where we can be dragged into the past, into the future, where we get the illusion that we are a separate self, where we compare ourselves to others, where we have those complex of superiority, inferiority, and equality, etc. And teaching is that the historical dimension where we see things being born, things hiding away, are only appearance. And if we can touch that dimension deeply enough, we can be in the other dimension that is called the ultimate dimension, where we can see that birth and death are only appearance, and reality is that there's no birth and no death. And there have been many examples and invitations for us to learn about impermanence, about interbeing, and about Nirvana, about the three Dharma seals. And the three Dharma seals are also what we can also call the ultimate dimension. So that was the first talk. If we believe in that teaching, we will see we should also be able to apply it, not only to the leaf manifesting itself in the spring, turning red and yellow in the fall, falling to the ground and hiding under the snow, or the wave in the ocean, rolling on the shore and getting back to the ocean, hiding and manifesting in the seventh next wave. So we can see that reality in those examples, in those images, And when we do that, we can also apply it to ourselves. And there are also many very funny, well, not funny, but Zen. Those things where they say, how did you look like before your grandmother was born? What is, well, all those funny Zen question that I used to very much like, and try to say that we have never been born and that we will never die. And I think that it is not too difficult to understand it intellectually. But intellectually, it's not the aim of our study and practice in Buddhism. And the study of and practice of Buddhism and all the teachings that our teachers has been teaching us is to lead us into not just understanding it intellectually, but to see it. And when I use the word see it, I use it in the meaning of right view. Seeing in terms of right view is seeing all dharmas with the three dharma seals, and seeing the impermanence nature, seeing the being nature, and seeing there are no birth and no death. And when we are trained and versed into looking at things with the eyes, or with the keys of the three dharma seals, we can also apply it and look at the Buddha with those eyes. So looking at the Buddha with the eyes of the Buddha, we may understand that the Buddha that was born some 3,000 years ago, and who died after 80 years of life and teachings, is only an appearance. Buddha Shakyamuni is not any different from the leaf or from the wave. And Shakyamuni Buddha has been born a long time before that date, and never died. So if we apply that same understanding, we will understand that just as the chemist, the pharmacist in the poison parable, appearing and disappearing, in the same way the pharmacist manifested himself with the antidote when he heard that his sons were his sons was poisoned, and pretending to die, to be dead, so that their son will take the antidote. In the same way, we may say that the Buddha manifested himself in order to propose or to bring the teaching, and pretend to have died, so that we would take the responsibility, or we would grow up into taking the responsibility of doing it ourselves, and doing what our teacher or what our father has asked us to do while he was alive. So if the Buddha has been born a very long time before the 2600 years we are thinking about, and if the Buddha has never died, where is he? And that is the good news, because I believe that he's still very present, very alive. And that he's right here among us at this very present moment. He didn't die. We do not need to wait another 400 years for him to reappear, because he's always here, and he has never left. And so the teaching about the Buddha always present, or that we are all Buddhas, are very compatible with that image. The image that the Buddha is still alive and teaching. He is using very ingenious and very skillful means to appear when he needs to and to hide away when he needs to hide away. Manifesting in all the forms that he needs to. Again, using skillful means in order to manifest in the form to teach the teachings that we need to hear. And that was the one of the proclamation of the Buddha in the Lotus Sutra. That he has always been there, and that he will always be. And that he has the wonderful capacity to be able to listen and to understand everything that is at play and in any situation. And according to the situation, he will know what is the teaching that is most adequate, appropriate in order to save or to do the work of helping relieve the suffering of the people that needs, who need to him to. So the notion of impermanence, the notion of interbeing, and the notion of the limitless life of the Buddha, I seem to understand that they all mean the same thing. They all mean that the Buddha is continuing. And that the Buddha is continuing in all the forms. And that each of us represent that continuation that allows the Buddha to have a limitless life. And that is why in the Lotus Sutra it also says that we are all Buddhas. We can see ourselves, each of us, as a Buddha, or we can see each of ourselves as a cell of a bigger Buddha, of the universal Buddha. And if we look at our body and we see that we are composed of so many cells, cells being born and cells disappearing, and if we imagine ourselves being the body of that Buddha, and if we can see ourselves maybe as being a cell of that Buddha, I would like to take a small to make a small parenthesis to remind you of maybe an image that you may that you have or may not have heard from Thay. When Thay say that the next Buddha is not an individual, the next Buddha is a Sangha. It is the same image that Thay has given us about us being a cell of that Buddha to be. I am asking your generosity to allow me to take that same image, but to apply the timelessness nature of the Buddha also in it, so that we do not wait for the Buddha to become, but to see that the Buddha is already there and that we are already a part of that Buddha. They are not contradictory, they are very much compatible also. And if you you allow me to do that, I will invite you to look at yourself and to see yourself with that invitation from the Lotus Sutra, to say that you are a Buddha, and that together we make up that bigger Buddha. And just like cells in our body, we have a healthier cell and we have less healthy cell. A healthier cell helping, healing the one that are less healthy, and the one that are less healthy are trying to be their best in order to get better. So each cell being a Buddha, all cells together making up that bigger Buddha, is also the vision that we can see with the net of Indra. The whole and the one and the whole. One cell containing all other cell, all other cell, all contained in one cell. So that was the my view and my invitation to you to look at the teachings on the limitless life of the Buddha and the invitation to see ourselves as being each of us a Buddha and continuing that work that the Buddha has started from the beginningless of time. Now to come back to, in French we say le plancher des vaches. Last month, when we were speaking about the merit, I have received some warnings from Lily and also some from some other friend to be very careful when I'm speaking about merit. And so I would like to make une précision. When I'm speaking about merit in the in this context, it is for me very simple. It is about causality. It is about, yeah, this is because that is. It is about when we are sowing corn grain, we will get corn. We will not get lemon. So it is very straightforward, and it does not have any other meaning than that for me. For me, merit is the result of our action. Merit is the karma. Merit is the fruit. Merit is the result of our practice. In the book that Thay has written, he has one of the definitions that he has given of merit is the energy that we receive or that we get when we are practicing. When we are speaking about the practice, for me it is also very simple, and it is the means that our teacher is teaching us in order to help us to touch the ultimate dimension in our daily life. And to touch the ultimate dimension in our daily life, in our school, is also very simple. It is about living very deeply every moment. And when we are here and now, very much in touch, we will be just like the wave, looking at himself, itself, and realizing and seeing that it is water. And all the practices that we are doing, all the practices that has been taught to us, are all doing exactly that, is to allow us to anchor ourselves, to solidify ourselves, to stay, to stick, to be in the moment, every moment, all the time. And I have often repeated and repeated to myself and to remind myself and to remind all of my friends that the Plum Village practice is very, very simple. It is about practicing the present moment, in the present moment, for the present moment, every moment. It is about the practice of joy. It is about the practice of happiness. It is about happiness in the present moment. And it is just that. I would like to now, you may have been waiting about light, the light of mindfulness. There is a gatha that I have used to practice, and I don't know if you have. It's the gatha for switching on the light. I don't remember the wording in English, so I will try to do a translation. Forgetfulness is darkness. Mindfulness is the light. May I bring awareness back for the whole world to shine. When I'm practicing that, when I heard about the title of the theme of this talk, The Light of Mindfulness, for me, mindfulness is the light. Mindfulness is the light that allows us to see things that we cannot see or that we do not see because we do not have that light. And every time when I enter a dark room and I remember to recite that gatha and switch on the light, it reminds me of what we are speaking right now about the light of mindfulness. And the light of mindfulness is what we can get with the practice of breathing and smiling, of waking up in the morning, walking mindfully, drinking tea, sitting, smiling, and all of those very simple practice that we have been practicing since the beginning when we learn about nourishing our joy in daily life, or nourishing our joy in Plum Village. And we just come back to those joyful practice. We improve our capacity for mindfulness. We improve our capacity to concentrate and to understand. And with that energy that we are developing, the merit that we get from the practice of mindfulness, so the mindfulness being the light that allows us to see things, mindfulness being also that energy of the Buddha that is radiating out. And when I read the Lotus Sutra, I love that image of the radiant Buddha, where with light, I don't know how it's say, shining out of each pores of his body. If we are not practicing, if we do not practice and we read that, we may think that it is a fantasy image, and I like the fantasy image, and it makes me, the child in me, smile because I love those fantasy. But it is not fantasy only, it is also a very illustrative, an illustration, a very real illustration of what we do see when we you have heard about, or I have heard many testimonials from friends who have attended retreats with Thay. And I often heard people say, you know, I was at the retreat, and when I saw Thay walking up his stage, that was enough for me. And so why the image of my teacher walking has such an effect on certain people? I believe that it is from the light that is radiating from his peacefulness and his love and his mindfulness. And it is also the capacity of our friends being able to see that light. And the description of the Buddha with light pouring out of each pore of his body is a very real image of that we can also see if we stop and we look at our at friends around us. And when I'm in a retreat, whether it be in Texas or in Pennsylvania, I love to look around and to see all the lights shining in my friends. And that's why in the orientation, we always remind one another. We are all walking bells, or we are a bell of mindfulness for all of the retreat participants. So when we say the light of mindfulness, it can be also the sound of mindfulness, and it can be also all the six other senses. But it is that energy that we are building up with our daily diligent practice of joy. And when we do that practice joyfully and steadily, diligently, it accumulates inside of us, and we receive the merit of the practice. And the merit of the practice that we receive is the joy and the happiness that we feel inside of us. It's this the ease and the lightness that we feel inside of us. It is the quiet happiness, the calm happiness that we feel. And when we have the feeling, and when we are in those state of contentment, we do not need to say much. We just walk. We just be. And our whole environment is touched by it. So the image of the light radiating out may not be the light that we can perceive, because our eyes are very limited and we can see only a very limited range of a wavelength. But all the other light that we do not see may be called the light of mindfulness, may be called the light of mindfulness, and we may not be able to see it with our eyes. But when we are in contact with such people, we are touched. And we know how Thay is teaching people everywhere where he appear. I have had the chance to be very close and near to the Dalai Lama when he came to Montreal. I was also there when the Pope visited Montreal, and they do have that radiation that just touches, well, I don't know about others, that touch me every time I have the chance to be in the presence or in the contact, or even now thinking of those great beings. So the merit that we get from the practice, the result of those practice, the energy of mindfulness that we receive, the merit that we get are manifesting themselves as light of mindfulness that has an influence on our environment. Another image that I has been thinking about is a combination of the story of the light radiating from the body of the Buddha and each of us being a cell of the Buddha. So if we are that healthy, radiating cell in that Buddha, and if all the surrounding cells of that same Buddha are also radiating, it will be a wonderful, beautiful, phosphorescent, well, I don't know, I can only imagine, and I don't have the skill to describe it, but it would be like a wonderful, luminous, green, well, why green, radiating Buddha. And if only half of the cells are radiating, and then it will be only half brilliant. And if only 10%, then we'll be satisfied with 10%. But if each of us were working diligently in order to shine, then our Sangha, then the Buddha will be more beautiful. Talking about light, and I see my sister Lily there. I have also seen my sister Terry. And have you noticed that they seem to have the same hairstyle? Very different from mine. I see those two lamps shining brilliantly, each in the Sangha. I didn't see my brother Tony, but he's also shining very brightly in Pittsburgh. And when I see those lamps, when I see those lights, I'm very happy for my teacher, for Thai. And I'm also very happy to see that they are the continuation of the Buddha, that is described to us in the Lotus Sutra, with the light of mindfulness shining with the light that has been transmitted to us from an endless stream of ancestors. And as I have mentioned before, the stream of ancestors started a long time before the 2600 years before Shakyamuni Buddha. And when I see those light, when I am in touch with those light, I'm very happy and hopeful. And I can see the Buddha shining. And it is not my hope, but it is, I can see how more brightly and more beautifully it can shine with the Sangha that they are teaching in right now. And the image, if you are reading the Lotus Sutra, when each pore of the Buddha shining light illuminating another realm, another place, another kingdom, seeing another Buddha sitting on the lion throne, it is exactly that image that I can see my teacher seeing from Plum Village and looking in America, looking in Asia, and seeing all those Dharma teachers doing wonderful work each in the locality. Another image of the light that I recall my teacher telling us, and I will try to describe it to you very briefly. But he said, can you imagine being in a dark room and you light up a candle? The candle will shine very brightly because in a dark place, a very small candle can illuminate the whole room, but very softly. And if from that same candle we light up another candle, and another candle, and another one, and we have 5 candles in the room will be much brighter. And when the room is lit by 5 candles, and you look at any spot of the room and you look at it and you say, this light, from which lamp is it? We will not be able to say from which lamp it is. All the five lamps are contributing to shine every place in that room. And when we have 20 lamps, it will be even brighter. And they are all shining out indiscriminately, the whole room, the whole space. And what is so beautiful when we have 20, or when we have 200 lamps, instead of a single one, is that if one or two or three of those 200 lamps get to be extinguished, it is very easy for the other 198 to shine for it, and it is also very easy for the two extinguished one to get relit by the other one. And that is what made Buddhism continue for all those time from the birth of Shakyamuni Buddha, from the time before him, and from many, many lifetime to come, that it will continue to shine. And I will end the talk here, thanking you for being there. I very much enjoy reflecting and thinking about the lamps and the light. And I have to tell you that it is also the lamp and the light in the street of Saigon that has been very inspiring for me to look into. And so thank you for all your presence. Thank you for the practice. And thank you for being with us all this year. And this is the last talk of the year. And I look forward for our new year, 2014, that will be coming in 2 weeks. As you know, every year our teacher is giving us gatha for our practice. The gatha for our practice in 2013 was, I have truly arrived, I'm really home. And I hope that we have been all able to do that. And it will be, I wish you a very happy coming home for the holiday season. I want to also share with you about the new gatha that our teacher will be giving to us for 2014. In Vietnamese, năm mới ta cũng mới, người vui cảnh sẽ vui. In English, new year, new me, joy within, joy all around. En français, année nouvelle, je me renouvelle, la joie en soi, la joie tout autour. So it will be a very joyful 2014, and I look forward to be practicing joy with you all in the new year. And until then, have a wonderful holiday season. I am bowing to you from Saigon.